Sorry, pros and cons. Sir, I'm taking over the show now. Yeah. Yeah, all right. Pros and cons, you better want, there's competition in these waters. I know this is your first episode and all, but don't tell me I told you this, but we're having, this is a rivalry now. For first place, best show. Who will win? I don't know, we'll find out. Anyway, let's start the show. Right now. How do I do that? Editor, cut this out! Don't make me look stupid! Editor! Welcome back, studio audience, to the listeners listening at home. Welcome back to Independent Incidentals with your pal, Dominic. It's like a deadpan of me just zooming into my vacant face. You can see like the soul and passion slowly leave me. You can see like that cheeky little grin that it doesn't have any meaning anymore because I do it too often. Just zooms in on that. Imagine a world where you're trapped inside your own psyche and you can't scream to anyone for help because you don't know what the problem is in the first place. Anyway, welcome back, everybody, to Independent Incidentals. No need to get a scare here. Today, episode 12. We're back in the slop pit. When I don't know what to do for an episode, I simply pull a game that I've been playing for a while. I don't seek them out. It just comes naturally to me, personally. Your pal, your boy, right? We got a little stacked lineup. It's a little bit of a more niche game. More niche, more fun. There's a reason why I wasn't here. I won't blame pros and cons. The newest Radio Laurier edition. If you want to go check them out, they should have their episode uploaded within either a week or a month. So, you know, I'm sure they'll let you know when that episode comes out. Or you can just check it daily, religiously even, if you want to. That's pros, P-R-O-S-E, and cons. No, they were chill. I think they saved all their projects. I think it was exactly 4:58 when I got into the studio. Then I had to unload everything, which took another couple of minutes. And then, for some beautiful cacophonous reason, the universe giving me the middle finger, the thing I use, the client that connects to Airtime Pro, didn't want to work for some reason. Just didn't feel like working. It's like these robots are almost subservient to us, even though we program them, but they don't want to listen to us. That's why I laugh in people's faces when they think that AI is going to take over. This doesn't even work half the time. You expect something that actually would have, like, intelligence to listen to you? Is that like a thing? Anyway, besides the point. I do love the recent news in AI, specifically regarding Mark Zuckerberg. I'm just imagining him when that Chinese AI startup company just got like their legs and NVIDIA's stock tanked significantly. And I just imagine Mark Zuckerberg in the office room just slamming his desk. It! Fuck. Piece of That's what I imagined anyway. Just his horizontal eyes begin to start blinking and start watering as he notices the gigantic tank in investors as people are stopping to taking this specific field seriously. Never take a field seriously, even if it's your own field. I believe that if you are working on something, you should be able to make fun of it. And I do that all the time with computer science, like I'm doing right now. Just take the absolute piss in what you do, so you won't get serious when it doesn't work out. So you can focus on what you enjoy about it, rather than trying to get successful in it. Anyway, that's my little life tip for the day. Before we get started, we need a little deep dive into the history of what game jams are. Because this game, I won't reveal the name of it just yet, but this game specifically got its start in Ludum Dare, which is actually, as I've learned, Latin. Go figure. The actual pronunciation, and bear with me here, is Ludum Dare. Ludum Dare. I believe the translation of that phrase in English is to give a game. Ludum being game, and dare being to give. The verb to give, which I think is an interesting little thing. I just think it's a kind of a little bit uncreative, and personally, it could have been something cooler. But this was the 2000s era. Early 2000s era. When all these different websites were just getting their little legs started to grow in. Like Newgrounds and a bunch of other ones. Little forums started propping up. And mind you, this entire operation, Ludum Dare, Ludum Dare, has been in operation since 2002. Right now, it's completely funded by one guy who stuck through it thick and thin throughout its entire development. Now, you might be asking me, what is Ludum Dare, Dominic? And I'd say thank you for using my full Latin pronunciation. It's Dominique. That's its full Latin pronunciation. I think that's actually Polish. Besides the point, Ludum Dare is a subsect of all these different types of game jams that have kind of cropped up in the recent years. Back in the day, you couldn't make a game jam because no one knew how to code a game, or at least code a game that could be presentable. But now that since so many tools like, I don't know, back in the day, Flash Player, but even more recently, Unity, Unreal, Godot, Game Maker, Lua, and a bunch of other different fun coding languages and coding software to make these games way more efficiently made, you can actually make a game within 48 hours, which this specific game jam tries a challenge. Can you make a game within one weekend? One single weekend? Can you do it? Can you do it? I maybe could. Depends. I've been making a lot of games. If you want to check it out, it's on my itch.io page, which I will possibly link. It depends how I feel on that specific day. But a lot of people submit games to Ludum Dare, Ludum Dare specifically. Over 1,000 people submit games within the past year. Back in 2014, though, it was a bit more under the radar. It was a whole team of people doing it. I believe Jeff was the founder of, I forget his last name, but Jeff, the founder of specifically Ludum Dare, had this whole project started. He got a few people on the team, and then eventually they abandoned the project. And then all that who was left was one guy that was left on the team, Mike Cash. Shack, is that, I believe that's Polish. I'm pretty sure that's Polish. Kabszak. It's Kasprzak. You know what? The RZ, I've done Duolingo. It's a tricky one. It's like the Z sound, you know? Like the Z, like the Kasprzak, you know? That kind of thing. You gotta kind of buzz with your teeth. I love consonant conjugations. It's my favorite thing in all of Polish. But besides the point, Ludum Dare has been running for the past, if I can do the math real quick, it's been running for the past 23 years. It's been a very long project. Unfortunately, as of recently, a lot of Ludum Dare's funding came from donations. But because a lot of stuff happened within like the team and how like there's a bit of backlash with how they kind of allowed submissions, I won't get into it, but it's there if you want to look it up. They kind of fell through a little bit, 2014. All that was left was Mike Kabszak. And from there, all he subsided on and his family subsided on were donations in order to keep the project running and to keep his family fed. So, you know, he started a Patreon, did pretty well, $1,000 a month, not bad. Unfortunately, this year, which was very upsetting to me, because it would have been perfect, because during the April season of exams, there's a little gap where there's a study break. It's the perfect weekend for you doing a game jam, for example. At least in my case. But unfortunately, this year, it's not going to happen because there's not enough funding. Now, granted, a lot of stuff came in and people started supporting the community way more. But, you know, support your local game devs. That's all I'm going to say. Support your local game industry startups. You know, give them the love and support. That's what this whole show's about. Besides the point. Anyway. Ludum Dare. 54. This one took place in the latter half of 2023, and the theme was limited space. Not liminal space, mind you. That's what I messed up on when I read it the first time. Limited space. No back rooms for you, okay? I see you. I see you back there. You want some back rooms. I'm not going to give it to you. I'm not going to give you infinite hallways, all right? I'm not going to give you weird, scary monsters that live inside of a pocket dimension that lives within the cusp of reality. I'm not going to give it to you, because you don't deserve it, okay? All right. Thank you. It would be quite funny, though, if like one of the actual developers who were working within Ludum Dare 54 actually, you know, made like a pool game, and then everyone like did a collective face slap, and then he's like, oh, dang it. I thought it said liminal space, not limited space. You know what, eh? It happens to the best of us. Limited space, though. What comes to mind when you think of limited space? This is kind of like the conceptualization portion of these game jams. I did a game jam back in 2023. The theme was destruction for the Godot Wild Jam back in 2023. I believe that was the either July or August game jam back then. So you have to make the game in Godot. The gimmick, though, besides the main theme, is that there's three what they call wild cards as a wild jam, and you can optionally choose them, kind of like a side quest, right? So, for example, in the most recent one, I think there was a stipulation that your game has to be grid-based, so it has to follow a grid. There's another one where you have to hide an Easter egg in the game. There's another one where you have to make the main character a duck or something. I don't know. Go wild with it, because it's a wild jam. But this is the Ludum Dare jam. Get back to the actual topic at hand. When you think of limited space, you obviously think of, you know, the specific genres that define, like, for example, like a stealth game, for example. Like, imagine a stealth game where you have, like, a limited amount of space, a limited amount of viewpoints that you could actually view within the, like a fog of war, for example, right? The most simplistic, basic example of that. Limited space. You have a limited viewing space. You can't see as far ahead as normally you can, which can add an element of mystery to the game, right? There's other things you could do as well. Like, you can take it more literally and place the character inside of a box that you have to, like, you know, push the sides in order to move around. You know, maybe you get trapped at, like, the packaging company, like Flat Stanley, you know, and you have to, like, push the box in order to find your way through the maze, right? It's an option. Claustrophobia. Stuff like that. It can be more thematic. It can be actually developing an actual game loop, gameplay loop, right? Which we've discussed over and over again throughout all iterations of this show. Basically, your gameplay loop is your main concept for the game, the main mechanic that you circle the entire game around. Like Call of Duty, for example, you shooty the bad guys, right? But for a more complicated example, take, I don't know, Civilization, right? There's multiple little smaller game loops, like increasing your religion status, increasing your military, science, construction, all these kind of things that feed into the giant, more bigger loop, which is winning the game through one of these avenues, becoming the most culturally significant civilization, or going to Mars, or, I don't know, conquering all your enemies and destroying the entire world, making you the tyrant ruler of the universe. I mean, maybe it's up to you, right? Those are the fun things about those games, but it's a little bit more complex. But what I think, when you're making a smaller game like this, because you can't go all out, you can't go on that far end of making a game that's extremely polished, because you only have 48 hours, which then reduces down to 24 hours if you account for sleep, and it probably reduces down again to 12 hours when you count other life responsibilities. There was one specific person I watched where I devlog for, because these are the kind of things you have to make for these game jams in order to credit your actual role in making these games, right? To prove that you actually made them and then you didn't just, like, offload it to somebody else or made it with an AI, etc., right? These games specifically have a lot to think about with the development style. But the thing is that you don't actually have that much time to develop it. You have, say, I don't know, like an hour to actually develop the idea of the game, and then the rest of the time you just have to make a mad scramble to get everything together. Right? You can work in teams, which helps, but how do you coordinate that team? How do you get one person to do the assets? How do you get one person to do the music? How do you code the game to make it playable? Because that's the main thing. It doesn't matter how good it looks. It doesn't matter how good it sounds. It matters how good it plays. These are the main tenets of a game jam. Does it play? Does it follow the theme? Right? These kind of things. Obviously, you get critiqued on other stuff like artistic ability, you know, stuff like that. But those are more to the side. They don't matter too much. I believe there's a few criteria in game jams specifically that I'll pull up right now, and we can discuss those real quick. Ludum Dare. It's so fancy. I don't know why. It's so fancy. Ludum Dare, the criteria. Rules, we could go down to the rules. Let's see here. We scroll down. it's also showing you, again, how art doesn't matter. Art does not matter. Besides the point, I believe down here. Here we go. So yes, I think it's from up to bottom. It doesn't really matter which ones you focus on, because it's a more laid-back game jam, to be honest with you. It's a stressful time when you trying to get it done. That's like the main crux of the challenge, right? But you can focus on whatever you want, right? So, innovation. Does your game do something different that other games don't in this specific aspect? How outside the box at Limited Space did you go in order to make a game specifically, right? Specifically, it says the unexpected, things in a unique combination or something so different it's notable. So you're trying to get the judges, which is like a panel of like other game developers, sound designers, stuff like that. People who are in this specific games industry field who judge the game and give it a specific rating. Sometimes it could be smaller, like 5 people, or it could be bigger, like say, I don't know, 50 people. They could be grading each of these games. Second category is fun. How fun is the game? How addicting is the game? Does the game want you to click that next play button? Do you want to play it again? How fun is the game? At least how enjoyable it was. I guess replayability does go into it, but it doesn't really matter too much as long as it is fun and it makes you want more. Theme. How well an entry suits the theme, specifically, in this case, Liminal Space. So again, Limited Space. Damn it! Every time! Theme, specifically, limited space. How does your game fit the vibe of what they're going for? Like, for example, with my specific game gen that I've done before, there was the specific theme called, Malfunction, right? That was the theme of the game. So I had to make a game that revolved itself, had a gameplay loop, or had a central thematic element of something malfunctioning. In this specific context, I made a tower defense game that requires each tower to be fueled. It has to include fuel. So once a tower runs out of fuel, it has a special effect that triggers. Like, for example, I had a bomb tower that shoots bombs at the enemies, right? Now, if you had low fuel, you can refuel it, of course. You can keep it as long as you want. You can spend money on fuel to refuel your robots, right? But once a tower, or a robot in this case, runs out of fuel, it for the bomb tower's case, explodes and makes the central tile that it originally was on rendably unusable. You cannot place any tower on top of it. Which was an interesting concept to me. I enjoyed that one a lot. There was another one, the Jukebot, a kind of buffing, kind of bard-influenced robot in this case, that when it's attacking in an AoE, also buffs the central towers that are next to it. Obviously, you can upgrade towers as well, so you can include, you know, extra range for the Jukebot, so it targets more people, more damage, etc., right? So the Jukebot, when it dies, sends out a gigantic sonic wave across the entire board and permanently buffs all of the towers, which I thought was also really neat. Only problem was that it was kind of broken. So I was kind of playing around with that, trying to see like how much I can scale and see if it can make it so that you make things unrentable on purpose to add more synergistic properties to the other towers, right? Make your towers better by making other towers malfunction on purpose, which was interesting. There's another water tower specifically that when it dies, it creates more water around it, right? So you can place more water towers, or possibly, I was thinking, make it so that another tower wouldn't malfunction, so you can, like, you know, place more towers on it. I believe that the bomb tower's malfunction also replaces water with dirt, so you can place things that were, like, I guess, a little bit farther out with actual towers, but within it, you couldn't, which was also, I enjoyed that one a lot. I did have a lot of fun making that. The only problem was is that I didn't have any artistic ability, so I couldn't like pick up the slack when I couldn't find an artist that was available at the time. To each their own. That's actually the next theme that you get graded on. Graphics, how good the game looks. Visual style, how neat it is, how charming, how cuddly the characters are, etc., right? You can judge that however you wish. It's really up to you. So, audio, of course. You can make a good soundtrack, how good it sounds. Also, like, sound effects, foley, stuff like that. How satisfying can you make those sounds so that it makes the player feel like you're actually impacting the world in a specific way? Like, making, like, a very good shooting sound. Like a pew-pew, you know? That kind of thing, you know? Or, like, you know, when you're, like, decapitating somebody, for example, you make, like, you get, like, a little piece of lettuce, and you, like, chop it in half, so it sounds like a, and then they go, ah! Yeah, I don't know. Just a thought. It's just a thought, man. Don't need to get me at it. Come on. Anyway, we're, humor. How amusing the game is. So, humorous dialogue, funny sounds, is it bad? Is it, like, really bad so it becomes really good because it's really bad and it makes you loll out loud? Who knows, man? That's for you to decide. The mood also, specifically with storytelling. What atmosphere you're trying to create for the player. Are you, like, how well are you able to cultivate that? It doesn't matter what vibe you're cultivating as long as it fits the theme. It's all that. And then obviously your overall score. So your totals of every specific aspect that I've just listed. Capiche? All right. So, with that in mind, let's get into specifically what one person thought of. I've discussed this game before. It's called Window Kill. Window Kill was a Ludum Dare game that was published during this specific time. If we can pull it up, let me find it real quick. Ooh, here it is, I believe. Ludum Dare 54. Yeah, here it is. I'll post this link possibly in the description of this episode. But the general gist is that your game appears inside of a window screen, as do most games. However, the window screen shrinks as you're playing it. So in order to extend your limited space of this specific window that you're being able to view, you have to shoot at it to extend it in a specific direction. So say if I shoot on the left side of the window pane, then it extends my view to that side, etc., right? You can see how interesting this concept is. And it kind of grabbed a lot of the judges in this very specific way. It scored overall second place in the game jam. A runner-up to the first place. I believe the first place winner of this game jam was a game called... ooh, what was it called again? Hope Falters. That was what the game was called. You can go check all these games out for free if you go to the itch.io page of each of these developers. You can just look up the title of the game and then put itch.io, and then you can find the games. And you can play them for free, which I think is really neat. Because it kind of shows everyone that you can make a game as just as good as something that, you know, is considered AAA quality. Like, for example, there's a bunch of games I could list that got their start with Ludum Dare. I believe the developer of Minecraft, for example, Thou Shalt Not Be Named because of his actions in the recent years, but he did get a start in Game Jam, specifically Ludum Dare, which popularized this way more when Minecraft exploded in 2011, because I believe that was also an entry for Ludum Dare back in the day. Into the 2011 Ludum Dare competition, right? There's a bunch of other ones as well. I've talked about Inscription, for example. That was another Ludum Dare game. And a few other ones that also got their start here. And also, of course, Helix 2. A lot of these developers that are coming out of the woodwork got their start with game jams because they just know this is exactly where they need to work their skills on. They need to work their skills in this specific field under pressure, right? Developing your talents, developing your skills, and developing your cooperation with other people if you're working in a team, right? It's such a fun idea. I really want to do it one day. I don't have the team or the time, unfortunately. Maybe one day I'll just plop something in and people can play it. We'll see. And if that ever happens, I'll let you all. You'll be the first people to know. My adored audience. I appreciate you all. You all are so special to me. Dominic, hello. It's me, Dom, your friend. I love you. So this game specifically has a lot to do with Windows space. But it also has to do with other Windows popping up. So the game basically kind of falls into waves. So each wave, there's going to be a wave of different enemies that kind of come out at you, and you have to shoot them. Simple, right? Only thing, though, of course, is that once the boss appears, they're not in the same window as you. They have their own special window that you have to traverse to on your computer screen, so you have to shoot in that specific direction in order to move your window to be able to actually hurt the enemy, to hurt the boss, right? Which is a very, very creative concept. Also, it kind of falls into this kind of window core aesthetic, you know? I've heard of a lot of people who like window core. Window core is basically the concept of Windows XP core, right? Having like that old bam, boom, 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 bam, boom. Having like that old Windows startup screen, having all these little web applications open at the same time. The kind of pixelated graphics that you had on the Windows XP back in the day. That is perfectly quintessential in a web core or Windows Core game, or Windows Core aesthetic in general. Now, of course, there's also music for it, there's a bunch of other stuff that you can ascribe a web core aesthetic to. But this game, I think, perfectly encapsulates it as a whole, right? Because it doesn't have to be just Windows XP. There's a bunch of different customization options in the full release of the game, where you can change how the different windows look. So say you don't want to have, like, you know, your default Windows 11 window look. You can change it to Mac OS, for example. Or you can change it to the old Mac, like the Macintosh 99, for example, which I personally have, which is very fun. I like this game a lot because it also includes a lot of fully supported mod support, right? So you can customize and add your own cursors. I think also boss assets, character assets, window assets, etc. to the game for free, no extra charge added. It's literally $5. Now, this game also, I believe, takes a little bit of the cake from vampire survivors in a very specific way of the hordes of enemies coming towards you. The difference is that you don't have automatic attacks. So you still it's a double stick shooter kind of game, right? You shoot and you have to run away from the enemy. It's that kind of game. I just realized that this game actually would be better with the controller. I've been playing with the keyboard and mouse this entire time, which is very funny to me. But either way, there's a couple of bosses in the game. The first one is the Spiker, who just shoots a gigantic laser at you, and also a little bullet hell as well. So you have to dodge around the little pellets that he shoots out, and you have to keep shooting him whenever he reappears on a different part of your computer screen in order to beat the game. Beat him specifically, sorry. There's the Hydra that kind of does a whole circle around your computer screen, so you're constantly trying to fight him when you're trying to also fight your screen at the same time. That one's also, that was the one who got me in the demo of the game back last year when I talked about it. Now, a little bit of a detour. Carissa hates this game. I know that. If you're listening, Carissa, yes, this is the one you hated, the only one you've ever played, and the one that you hate the most, which I think is very funny. It's the only one that's free as well, so I completely understand your hatred of this game. However, it's a very fun game. I'm just saying. It's a very addicting game, but at the same time, I'm courteous to say there's a few flaws with the game, don't get me wrong here. First of all, it's actually like the bugs itself. Like when you have, so there's two settings specifically. You can customize windows, which will give you fake window panes that won't actually act as windows, and then you actually can make windows within the, which is the default, right? Only problem with that though is that once you get to the higher, once you get within 30 minutes into the game, the windows start jittering. Why? I don't know. Maybe there's too many assets going on at the same time, or too many objects it's trying to process. Who knows? Godot is a mysterious engine at times. I can attest to that. This is what this game was developed in. I can attest to that. But this game specifically has a very hard issue with how well it runs in very specific instances, which is fair, understandable. But this game also, I believe, has a bit of a more, not really egregious issue, just a minor issue regarding where your character is. Theoretically, if you're really good at the game, you should be able to dodge every single bullet, like an actual bullet hell. But there's some times where no matter what you do, because there's once you get to the higher echelons of the game, there's like at least three bosses on the screen at the same time. So there's bosses that cover the entire screen with some icky, gross stuff, which I'll get to in a moment, that you can't dodge, pretty much, unless you get to a very specific space inside of the screen. Also, there's other projectiles shooting at you, and also your character is really hard to see. So you kind of have to balance that. There's settings in the game that allow you to have better visibility with your character, but they're kind of obfuscating the actual game itself. So it kind of, it's like a bandage fix to the problem. My only two complaints about this game, because this game is a fantastic, like, I'm talking about, like, with other games, like Balatro, for example, we're talking about games that I would imagine would have been, like, pre-installed on Windows, like Solitaire, for example, right? It's like, these games perfectly encapsulate that arcade-y style that original Windows product came with, that just absolutely fills me with so much glee, joy, and nostalgia for that time. Snake, man, I'm telling you, Snake was the goat back in the day. There's a few more bosses to cover. One of which is a slime boss that splits into smaller slimes that you have to individually fight off at the same time. I believe it's like it turns into like 9 smaller slimes, so you have to kind of compartmentalize and make sure that you're not overrun with slime and goop and muck. Additionally, there's the, I think there's 2 more bosses. No, there's 3 more bosses. There is the infection, right? I think it's called a miasma specifically in the game files, that takes over your entire screen and infects everything, pretty much, which is very funny to me. It infects your entire screen and they kind of sit on the edge of the window and you have to shoot them off while also dodging their entire coverage of the entire screen, which is very annoying. Another very annoying boss are the orbs. The orbs are exactly what they are. It's five orbs that kind of circle around the middle of the screen. Hold on, let me find them real quick. Orbs window kill. They're called the orbs, orb array. It's an orb array. It's like an array of orbs. Orb array. Basically, the idea is that it's a gigantic array of orbs. I've said it like five times already. I've talked to one of my friends about how, like, once you say something 100,000 times, it kind of loses meaning. This is one of those moments. Yeah, so basically the orbs, they kind of just, like, float around being, like, all orb-like, so you kind of have to ponder them a little bit, make sure the orbs aren't, like, you know, being, running amok on your orb. 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 So, basically, they make beams between all of the different orbs that are still available, that are still active, and you have to kill all separate orbs. You have to set, and then once, there's also a cursor on the screen that also appears when these orb arrays come up, so you have to dodge it dragging the side of the screen and then clicking, or snapping, I guess, which would, I guess, Control-Alt-Delete you? I don't know. I don't know how that works. I've never got caught by it, because I'm just too good. Alright. Final boss, I believe. Unless, I want to find out what the hell this is. Oh, I see. Okay. That's something that you'll have to figure out yourself, because I didn't do it yet. It's a augmented version of the quote-unquote final boss on this list, which is the smiley face, which is kind of... the developer's kind of signature, which is very funny. He signs off all his stuff with a smiley face. You can see it on the webpage and everything like that. The idea of the smiley face is that he's the most meta character in the entire game, because he isn't able to be shot at. You can't attack him. You can't use your weapon to attack him. You have to actually first survive his onslaught of what he does to your specific window. So he's gonna, I think one of his actions is he's able to hold the screen and press it down so you can't actually extend the screen until you press the little X button at the top of his window. So he also has his own special window that you have to click on in order to do damage to him, which is very interesting to me. It's a very, very meta and cool concept. Of course, there's a few, you know, a little bit minor issues with that that I have a little bit of unvirtuous, specifically with having to focus on your character while you're trying to dodge bullet hell and also trying to deal damage to the smiley at the same time. It's kind of annoying in a very multitask-oriented way. You have to focus on a lot of things at the same time. But, you know, it's just a thing. It's fine. Of course, there's a secret final boss, as I mentioned before. That's a offshoot of the smiley. But we don't have to worry about that guy. He doesn't disturb us. He's named ?, but that's okay. You don't have to worry about him, man. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. He doesn't scare us. He doesn't scare us. So, as you might notice, I am running off of 4 hours of sleep because I had to go to a meeting to find a few tech things to make sure that my concert wave file works, because I have a little concert that I have going on. Not my concert specifically, just a composer's concert that Laurier hosts every term, I believe, or every couple months. I'm a part of that for some reason, which is really cool. So if you want to check it out, I believe if you're a student, the tickets are free. Just go to the Eventbrite webpage and then look up composer's concert or something like that. I don't know exactly where you can find it. Just look up composer's concert Laurier, and then you should be able to find it somewhere. It was like... Composer's Concert Laurier tickets, and then you should be able to find it. Easy Google search. Easy Google search. Then you can watch me live performing something. Who knows? I'm not going to give it away. You think I'm going to give it away? Not to you. Bozo? I'm sorry, that was a bit mean. I didn't mean to do that. That was rude. That was really rude of me. I didn't mean to do that. Besides the point, after the initial release, a lot of these bosses weren't released until the 3.0 and 4.0 versions. But another game with the full release of the game came with additional characters and a hell load of customizable, unlockable options. There's four songs that exist in the game that you can unlock through specific achievements, and also there's a bunch of characters that you can unlock through specific achievements. The normal guy, I believe his name is Epsilon, is just a basic shooty guy, so he just shoots pellets at the enemies. There's another one called Zephyr, I believe, who can has a sword instead, who slashes enemies close range, and also has a dash ability that you can also upgrade. That's another thing I gotta talk about. Upgrades. You can upgrade your weapons. It's very specific to a specific character. So, for example, an upgrade for Zephyr is gonna be different from an upgrade for Epsilon. But both of these are pretty similar in the way that they have, you know. For example, you can upgrade fire rate, you can upgrade splash damage, multi-shot, for example, which has a different effect. For example, Bastion, who instead of shooting lasers, shoots a longer-charged cannon, laser cannon, kind of like the Spiker boss that we just discussed. All different ways to play the game. I'll only say that it's way more fun to play the game with Bastion than any other character. On the premise that it's like, you have to have a very precise aim with the other characters. You have to make sure you're upgrading the right things at the right time. With Bastion, you can just shoot your laser wherever you want, man, and it works. It works. Oh, it works. Especially with his special ability. So whenever you defeat a boss, you get a star that you can spend on either two fixed upgrades that are consistent throughout all characters, which are Peer, which allows you to have a separate screen that allows you to see what's going on in. And I believe it's called Drain, which I never really used that much, but allows you to, as the thing mentions, drain nearby enemies. So there's a little square that appears that you can drag the window on to drain enemies in that specific location, which is very neat. I think all these are very cool concepts that I like a lot. I wish they kind of went a little bit more crazy with it. Like, you know, you can upgrade, you know, how the screen acts in the very specific ways. Like, upgrading screen decay, maybe, so that it becomes less of a problem. But I think you should have it so that you always have to worry about the screen closing in on you. That's my opinion, of course. But you never know. I could be wrong. I'm always wrong. Oh... Woe is me. Anyway. This game is a very fun game. It's only $5 on Steam. Give it a shot. Or if you want to just give it like a quick demo run, you can try the 2.0 version on itch.io, which is free. It is a free version of it. But it has not all the characters. It doesn't have all the bosses. It certainly doesn't have the same polish as the full version. I eventually splurged on it, and it is a very good decision because it's a very fun game. I play it all the time to get myself distracted from my actual work. Well, I guess this is my actual work, so I guess I'm not distracted. Besides the point, I hope you all have a fantastic, a grandiose week. Because I am going to have a very busy one. I know that for sure. I hope that everyone has, you know. I hope everyone has their ducks in a row, because midterms are going to come up soon, and I don't want anyone stressing. I don't want anyone stressing in my life, okay? We're going to take it back. No stress allowed. Final. That's my final proposition, my final ultimatum to you, the audience. No stress, just work. Get on it. No procrastination, just keep working at it. You got this, man. Lails and germs, you got this. I believe in you. Yes. All right. I think that's enough for me. Hopefully all the episodes will get released soon by the time this airs on the actual archive page, which you can go to Independent Incidentals for. You can look it up, or you can go on to Radio Laurier to watch all the episodes again. See what I said wrong, maybe. Point out all my flaws, perhaps, maybe. Is that what you want to do with your time? Fine, be it. So be it. So be it. Have fun. I hope I see you next time. Adios.